Sam McEwen with the Pick Six Podcast. I am flying solo for the moment, but we may have a special guest during this particular podcast. Stay tuned and listen in because you just never know when it'll happen. Social distancing volume 8 or 9. I guess I can't remember exactly which one it is. Evan is on paternity leave. So congrats to him. Chris this week is out on furlough and I'm here. And it was a busy week of news in Nebraska athletics. It's funny how news just keeps going and going and going and going, even though there isn't a whole lot of sports going on. We're going to touch on a bunch of that stuff. We're going to start off with the kinker and punter additions this week. Connor Culp, LSU kicker, has decided to walk on to the Huskers, and Daniel Cherney, who is a punter through Pro Kick Australia, is going to join the Huskers as a scholarship player. So Cherney is scholarship, Culp is a walk-on. And then Nebraska also learned the destination of former quarterback Noah Vedral, who's going to Rutgers, and we learned a little bit more about the extension of the dead period. What we will talk about off the top is the kicker and punter stuff. We'll go through a little bit of Nebraska men's basketball. Chris would normally talk about that stuff in the addition of Eduardo and Andre. But Chris, again, being off this week, we'll touch on a few aspects there. And then we will talk a little bit about just the movement in the sport to see if college football, when and if it's going to come back. I think there's more and more conversations about trying to get this thing going in the fall, trying to get it go right away. And, of course, Scott Frost comments during the week about the impact that it's going to have on businesses and on smaller sports. Within Nebraska, we're already starting to see some major impacts across some of the leagues that aren't wasting any time. They're going to announce these cuts now because they know that they're eventually going to come to pass. We want to remind everybody that we have a sponsor. It's the Allstate agency, Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach agency is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. You can rest assured a lot of those will be used right around Memorial Day. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Gal Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdock a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. We're going into, severe weather season, and so there's probably going to be a hailstorm or two somewhere across the state. Free no-obligation insurance reviews and quotes are going to make sure that all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact them at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. That is Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach agency. Well, we're going to start with the LSU kicker, Connor Culp, who is transferring to Nebraska. As of this morning, he confirmed that to multiple media sites, including myself. Culp was LSU's kicker in 2017. That was his redshirt freshman season. I believe that was the first year for Ed Ogeron, Coach O, at LSU. He was a redshirt freshman. He hit 11 of 16 field goals. His biggest game was against Auburn when he hit 2 clutch field goals to help the LSU Tigers beat the Auburn Tigers 27-23. He hit 20 of 23 extra points, and then he lost his job. He lost it initially to Cole Tracy, I think. He was a second-team All-American in 2018 for LSU, and so they had a guy come in, and that guy beat him out, and that was sort of a notable deal. And then last year they had a freshman come in, and I believe he won the job as well. And so his name was Cade York. And he came in and made 21 of 27 field goals and then an astonishing 89 of 93 extra points. 93 extra points. Wow. LSU scored some points last year, I think. So Cade York was just a freshman, so he was probably going to keep the job going forward. The previous year, Cole Tracy was 29 of 33 and then 42 of 42 on extra points. That's what he was really good to. Connor Culp's going to be better than pretty much everybody in Nebraska has in its system, and I think that's what makes it a wise addition, including the fact that it's a walk-on. You know, he's not a scholarship guy, and so as a result, you know, Culp is a guy that can come in and basically compete for the job the exact same way that Chase Contreras is going to compete for the job, or Tyler Crawford's going to compete for the job, except he has notable experience. And so I would compare this favorably to when Nebraska brought in Pat Smith back in the 2013 season. I think Smith got a scholarship, though, from Western. He was out of Western Illinois, and he came to Nebraska and got a scholarship, I believe, and had a really nice season. He was a reason Nebraska beat Penn State, and that was a really, really good setup. And then after that, from 2014 to 2017, Nebraska had a scholarship kicker in Drew Brown, and he was also really solid. They decided Barrett Pickering was going to be the next guy in line. Pickering had an up-and-down freshman year in 2018, and, of course, got hurt before the 2019 season. That didn't go well. Once he came back, he missed some crucial kicks. He wasn't 100% healthy, and he has since medically retired from the sport. He did that in the winter. And so Nebraska, last year, used six kickers, including multiple guys that weren't on the team before the season began, multiple guys who have transferred. None of those kickers are on the team this year. That includes Pickering, Dylan Jorgensen, Matt Waldock, Harrison Martin, and let's see, well, Lane McCallum, I think, is on the team, but he's not there as a kicker. And then I believe there was one other one. So Isaac Armstrong. So, you know, those six guys are no longer, you know, kicking. And so they had to bring in a whole new crop of players, and they couldn't just bring in one. And they couldn't just bring in Chase Contreras, you know, cross their fingers and hope that worked. And it didn't work. They were going to have more than a few guys, and Connor Culp is the next in that line. You have to give Jonathan Rutledge, Nebraska's new special teams analyst, a lot of credit for the work that he did there. In landing Culp, that was a really big deal, and courting him. And so I think Nebraska's kicking situation is better than it was last year, in that you have a very experienced kicker in Culp, you have a very big-legged kicker in Contreras, and you have a couple of rookies coming in who might be able to make an impact. So there's a bunch of competition. May the best man win. A scholarship has not been used on any of those guys, and so you don't have to worry about, you know, wasting a scholarship. Just the best guy wins the job. The punting conversation is a little bit different. Daniel Cherney from Pro Kick Australia committed to Nebraska for the 2020 season this week, and he is a scholarship player. Now, that tells you what Nebraska thinks of him, and what Nebraska thinks of Pro Kick Australia, and what Pro Kick Australia thinks of Jonathan Rutledge. And Jonathan Rutledge has a long-term relationship with Pro Kick Australia. It actually began at North Carolina when Rutledge was a special teams analyst there. North Carolina had a great punter who spent a couple of seasons there. And then Rutledge went to Auburn, and there was another punter from Pro Kick Australia who was at Auburn. And then when Rutledge came here, you know, obviously – they had already had the relationship and the pipeline built with this specific guy. I'm going to have more on Pro Kick Australia and just Nebraska sort of redoing its special teams room this weekend. What I can tell you is that, you know, I think Pro Kick Australia does not recommend players that they don't think will be really, really, really good at the collegiate level. Now, sometimes it doesn't pan out, but usually it does. And it usually pans out in a really good way. And so they don't recommend players that they don't think are going to be really good, A. B, they don't have relationships with every school, so they have to trust the operation at school A or school B or whatever. And so I think it's a good relationship that Nebraska is going to be able to develop. And it's quite likely that, you know, Cherney is going to be here for a while. And so it's hard to explain, but on the front end of things, Pro Kick Australia does a really good job of delivering players to the United States and delivering players who are likely to stay. These are not necessarily guys. They might go to the NFL early in theory because they're so good. They might leave a year early, but this isn't one of these situations where the kid comes and he's at a place for a year and then he transfers to another school and then he transfers to another school. Usually it's a pretty consistent, constant placement. The best example I can give you, I think, is Blake Hayes, who is at Illinois and is a really, really good punter there. And he's a giant guy. So Daniel Cherney is 6'4", 220. Blake Hayes is 6'6", 230. And he's from Melbourne, Australia. And he's a former, I think he's a former either Australian rules football player or soccer player. I'm not exactly sure, but Blake's been there. No, it's Australian rules. Blake's been there his whole career at Illinois. Now, Illinois isn't a good football program. I mean, it hasn't been, period. So he's not punting there because, you know, that was the best place that he could punt. This is a guy who was a 2019 Big Ten Punter of the Year. He had his punts last year, 44.9 yards a punt, which is insanely good. He had 28 punts down inside the 20-yard line with only two touchbacks entering the bowl game. I mean, Blake Hayes was unbelievable. He's still there. That's my point, is that these guys don't leave where they're at. They're placed. They stay. They get their education. They get a degree. Maybe they play in the NFL. Maybe they don't. But it's a really stable situation. And so Nebraska's not getting a kid who's just going to bail on him for some reason. There's an expectation level on the front end from Pro Kick that you're going to stick it out and you're going to be there and you're not going to walk away from your commitment. So I think Nebraska anticipates in giving this kid a scholarship, he's going to be there a long time and he's going to be an impactful player. Again, there might be a guy that'll leave after 3 years to go to the NFL. But Hayes didn't leave and I think he's going to play all four seasons at Illinois, and he's been really, really good for Illinois all 3 years. So one of the biggest strengths of their team, to be very honest with you. So Nebraska in short order has completely revamped. I mean, completely revamped its special teams operation from a kicking perspective. It is obviously still has questions to answer as it relates to kick coverage. It still has questions to answer as it relates to kickoff return, where it has been surprisingly mediocre for a couple of years now. Like it's just not nearly as good as one thinks it could be, given some of the skill players that are within the program. Outside of J.D. Spielman, whom no one knows is going to return or not, he might come back, he might not. Nebraska's return game outside of J.D. Spielman has not been great since 2017. It's been mediocre to poor. They've done a pretty good job of blocking kicks, but they haven't done a great job of returning kicks outside of J.D. Spielman making a couple of returns here and there. So there are things about Nebraska's special teams that really has kind of wandered the wilderness for a while now. I think it's been longer than just the passing of Sam Foltz in July 2016. I don't think that's the moment that I would pinpoint. Honestly, I'd pinpoint 2015 when Bo Pelini left and Mike Riley came in and kind of handed over the special teams to Bruce Reed, but didn't, you know, Reed wasn't entrusted to figure out who their returner was going to be on kickoffs. And then DeMorney Pearsonell got hurt, and then he wasn't much of a punt returner in 2015 because he was coming off injury, and then he got hurt again. And there was all these different things that went into why I think it kind of fell off a cliff pretty quickly, and it predated Foltz's passing. But it was accelerated by that, considering the fact that, you know, Foltz was going to punt in 2016. Caleb Lightmorn was thrown into a situation probably before he should have been, and then he was very up and down in his career. And then when Drew Brown left, the kicker that Reed had recruited, or I guess that Nebraska had recruited to replace Brown, just wasn't the same caliber of kicker. And then he got hurt, and so Nebraska's kind of been wandering this sort of wilderness now for the last 4 or 5 years, and it hasn't always been real pretty. And if there's one thing I think we can say with some confidence, is programs like Nebraska probably need to be really damn good in special teams if they're going to be all that they can be as a program. Clemson was not good in special teams last year. They weren't. I mean, their special teams efficiencies were poor. Alabama, as most people know who have watched Alabama over the years, has struggled from time to time with kickers. I mean, they've struggled to find guys that can consistently kick. They've been pretty good punting, and they've been pretty good with returns, but they've struggled to find good kickers. Well, guess what? Alabama and Clemson can overcome those mistakes. So can LSU. I don't think it really would have mattered if Cade York kicked for LSU last year or not. LSU was winning every game because they were outscoring everybody. But that's part of the issue at hand here, is that teams like Alabama and Clemson and LSU and even Ohio State can overcome special teams mistakes and gaffes and aspects like that. What teams can't overcome is, you know, a situation, you know, like Nebraska's, where you don't have enough talent to necessarily dominate on offense and defense, and so you need to be really good in the third phase, special teams, or otherwise you're gonna struggle. So it's one of those situations where Nebraska has to get better in that phase, preferably be one of the best teams in the Big Ten in that phase, and get 3 to 6 points a game based on field position, based on making a kick, based on recovering a fumble, based on a big return, winning that special teams battle by 3 to 6 points every game. And I don't think anybody would say that over the last 2 years that Nebraska has consistently won that special teams phase against really any team. They've had some moments where they've had some real nice games on special teams. They've had some disastrous games on special teams. And at the end of the year, their efficiencies just indicate they weren't among the better teams in the Big Ten in that phase. So when Rutledge took over, there was a lot for him to do. And one of the things that he had to do was upgrade the caliber of player who is actually kicking the ball, because coaches don't always have the best, whatever you want to call it, regimen to coach those guys. You want your kickoff specialist to kick the ball into the end zone. You don't want to have to worry about that. When you need a ball kicked through the end zone, you want to be able to do that. When you have a 35-yard field goal, you don't want to be on pins and needles about the fact that it might not go in. When you need somebody to punt the ball out of their own end and boot the thing 65 yards high and in the air so that you can flip the field position, you want to have some reasonable confidence that you can do that without having to stand there and watch the guy do it hour after hour to be confident that he's going to. Nebraska hasn't had that luxury in the last couple of years. You know, I think Caleb Lightbourne got better in 2017, but that was because he was coached like nobody's business by Bob Diaco. He was relentlessly coached by Diaco. And very few people have the, what do you want to call it, the stamina or the whatever you want to call what Diaco has, the laser focus to zero in on that over and over and over again. Ideally, you'd like your punters to be a little lower maintenance. So I think Nebraska in getting Cherney and in getting Culp have created a lower maintenance situation for themselves. So it'll be interesting to, you know, kind of see what happens, you know, from here. I think Nebraska's probably upgraded its special teams quite a bit, to be very honest with you. It's hard to tell exactly how much yet, but I think you should feel better about where they're at. I was actually much more concerned about the punting situation than I was the kicking situation. I figured they'd find a place kicker who could kick, who can make field goals 40 yards in. Hell, Matt Waldock could do that. And they brought him off the soccer team last year, the club soccer team. I think you can find place kickers who can make a kick. My concern is punting is now such a high level operation, and it's filled with so many elite players that Illinois has Blake Hayes, and Nebraska had a pretty good guy in Isaac Armstrong, but he wasn't Blake Hayes. And, you know, there's guys that are kicking the ball 47, 48 yards. And if Nebraska's over here kicking at 37 or 38 yards, that's a whole different category of punter. And Nebraska, with all of its resources and all of its connections and all of its ability to kind of sell itself as a program, ought to have a 47 or 48-yard punter when they want it. And now they do. And so I think the punting situation needed a significant upgrade. I'm unconvinced that the guy that was already here was going to be that guy, because after all, he didn't beat out Armstrong. And I am fairly convinced that the guy that they just got is going to be that sort of 3 or 4 year steadying force at that position that you don't have to overly worry about. We'll see what happens with that particular position. Do we have our special guest yet? Is he on? I think he's still trying to connect here. I think we're going to have Tom Chattel when the time comes. Is Tom with us yet?
Hi.
Yeah, he's here. There he is.
How did that happen?
You're here in his football room with his pennants. Those are some great pennants on the wall there,
Tom. Oh, man.
Some elite. My favorite one is the UCLA pennant. That's a great one.
You like that one?
I do. Yes. That's a quality pennant there. There's also some old school Big Eight and
I should do a tour.
You really should. Like I like the pennants. Yeah, it's nice. How are you doing? How are you doing in the pandemic?
I just got on Zoom for the first time, so I feel like I'm finally in the pandemic world.
Good.
Finally, I've seen my wife do it a million times, and my kids do it every day for school, and I'm always last to know. So here I am.
Is this the last day of work for your kids in school? Because it is for ours here at LPS.
They, two of them were done yesterday, and okay. My oldest, has a some kind of a test maybe to take today, but she was basically done, so it's over.
Congratulations.
I mean, it doesn't feel like summer at all. It didn't feel like summer vacation at all.
No.
It feels like it's weird.
It is weird. And as I've talked to parents and teachers who are also often parents, I think they need to figure out a way to get back to school in the fall, in-person classes.
I think they will. I think they will.
I think they will too, but they need
to. Every indication is they will. But it's just going to be weird. And we've heard, there's all kind of contingency plans right now. And one of them is they stagger the times when kids go in the building and mm-hmm. where they go and what, or maybe they put everybody in one classroom and you stay there all day, but the teachers rotate classrooms. We'll see. I mean, I saw something yesterday about the state of Ohio opening up swimming pools in a month. That's big. That's very big. I think we're going to be okay. I think we're just going to have to do this slowly. But I think we're going to be back, and I think we're going to have football. But I don't think we're going to have fans. Are we going to have writers? They let us in the building. I think they will. But will they let us cram into that press box? That's another question.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We might have to sit outside. In the bleachers, which would be empty, so it'd be okay. There's an overhang at Memorial Stadium, so in theory you could do the workstations underneath the awning there. You know what I find? I want to talk about that because we're done talking about Nebraska's special teams. So what I wanted to talk to you about is just the whole conversation around college football coming back. And the dynamics that are in play. Scott Frost, Scott always says quite a bit in a little amount of time. He's good at saying something that's notable. And one of the things that he said in his 10-minute interview with Sports Nightly this week is that the conversation that we're dealing with as it relates to football coming back is, of course, bigger than just wanting football to come back. He mentioned businesses in Lincoln that he fears would close or be significantly damaged if there is no fans or football this season. And he mentioned other sports at Nebraska that would be impacted as well. And then another comment he made is everybody has a hand in the cookie jar, which is true. That every governor and every president and every conference commissioner is going to have an opinion. And on some level, this is going to be challenging, right?
Well, yeah. And, the problem is, I wrote about this, nobody's in charge of college football or college basketball. Why won't the NCAA do that? Why are they so afraid to step up and take charge of this thing? What's the deal? They've never been in charge of the postseason in football, but they're in charge of the postseason in college basketball. Instead, you've got all these conferences who all mean well, but they've all got different agendas, different governors they have to listen to. College football is got a numbers problem. It's got 130 teams in all these different states that have all these different rules right now. So, in that way, it's hard for them to really get on the same page. But yeah. It'd be good if somebody was out there leading the way and trying to organize it. And I don't feel like anybody is. So you're going to get every day is like a different statement, a different news story, a different, well, we can do this. No, we can't. It's crazy. So
right.
I feel like we're going to have all these different college football seasons. Some might be longer than others. You might have one conference that plays 9 games, maybe another one plays 6. But that, you don't get a Heisman Trophy that way. You don't get a college football playoff that way.
Right.
But that's what we have this year. Who's going to step forward? I'd like the five conference commissioners to just appoint somebody and say, okay, Mark Emmert isn't gonna do this. We have a guy who's going to be in charge of everybody, and we all agree that this is the guy to do it. I don't know who that is, but it's, you know.
Like, if you had to pick somebody, well, let's say it was you, and you were the person who was overseeing this. What would be the most important thing that everybody got a certain number of games?
Well, I think that they're on the conference calls every day or every other day. It sounds like the commissioners are, so they are trying to get on the same page. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be a uniform date. There's going to be rules. What kind of testing do you need? When do students have to be back, or do they? How many fans could come in, if any? What would the starting date be? Could you settle on like 4 weeks instead of 6? I mean, I think these guys are all in pretty good shape already. Maybe that works. What about if everybody in the conference can't play? Does the conference play, or do they move on? I think they don't want to move on and play, but who do they play? That's what I wanted to ask James Franklin last week, when he said, well, if everybody in the Big Ten can't play, we need to play. Well, fine. Who are you going to play? If only 9 or 10 of the schools in the Big Ten can play, who you got? And who's not playing? And where are you going to play them, and when? And all that stuff. And then you got TV will try to come in, and if the schedules have to be jumbled and redone. What does TV say? And all that stuff. So, because TV will be more important than ever this year. Everything will be a TV show. The ratings will be incredible. The all-time ratings. And I wonder if, to Scott Frost's point about the businesses of Lincoln, why, could they, on game days, could they be open? And I bet Husker fans might show up and watch in their favorite bar or restaurant while they're eating every other table, if that's how it still is. I don't know. There's a lot of questions, but you just feel like it's just kind of moving along at its own pace, and really it'll be kind of a miracle if it happens, because nobody's in charge.
Mm. I kind of feel like it's still going to happen, in part because there seems to be a growing understanding that if the football season doesn't happen in the fall, A, there's no guarantee it happened in the spring, because, you're going to have a winter, and the winter, I'm amateur epidemiologist. I think most people think it could get bad again, or a little bit worse than it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know what would make the spring safer other than, wishful thinking. The second thing is that some of these, look at Nebraska's non-conference schedule. So they have 3 non-Power 5 teams on it: Central Michigan, South Dakota State, and Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati's a good team, so they're better than, Oregon State. But Cincinnati is not part of the Pac-12. It's not part of a major conference. I feel confident in saying that all 3 of those schools, they'll take the money. Nebraska's willing to pay them to come out.
They're going to need the money. I saw today that the MAC said, we're not going to stay in hotel rooms that before a game.
Yeah.
And the travel squad has been cut. So all these group of fives are going to start doing stuff that they're not going to wait.
They can't, because they're not going to get a big wad of cash by the TV people anyway. I mean, they kind of already know, even if they play, they're not going to get a ton of money,
But here's,
I got to think, Central Michigan, South Dakota State, and Cincinnati—they'll all take the cash.
But a lot of that cash is based on a full stadium.
Yeah.
So what happens if you don't have any fans?
That's right.
The contract void.
Act of God, it might be.
I think these conference games may not happen, or the non-conference games may not happen, because a lot of them won't want to travel. The what was it? Let's just buy a bus. you know, maybe you throw something together. You know, maybe maybe Nebraska plays K-State and everybody gets on a bus or KU.
I'd love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just for this one year, it's going to be weird. No matter how you slice it, it's going to be weird. And I tell people, if there's no college football, there's no college basketball because it's right on top of it. It starts right in October. So we got, you know, a lot of non-conference games that start earlier. So, but anyways, the football, I just have a hard time thinking it'll be non-conference games. I think they'll have to squeeze in as many conference games as they can and try to get as much of the Big Ten money recouped as they can. And it's just, you know, hopefully it's like everybody else in the country. It's going to be a tough year. Can you survive it? You know, can you hang in there? That's going to be interesting. We're already seeing signs of athletic departments that are starting to get creative with their finances.
I don't know. Don't you worry about a school like UNO and what they're going to do?
Well, I don't know what the revenue stream. I mean, they don't have huge revenue streams.
Right.
They do rely on a private money. I mean, I think you could say they could be hurting, but what's the hockey thing going to be like? Is that
right? That's the sport.
That'll be like basketball for Creighton, and I'm assuming that just like Creighton basketball is 90% of their budget with fans, that hockey is probably the same way, you know. So it's going to be touch and go right now. It's still too early to say. But boy, it sure seems hard to imagine, unless there's some kind of a Hail Mary with a vaccine or something, that there's going to be fans, if there are going to be any fans in any event anytime soon in this calendar year. It's hard to see. So, but going back to what you said, could you play spring football? Yes, you could, but you don't want to impact the next season. So it would have to be shortened again, and which you could. You know, life said, why not play 8 games? 2 months, 8 games, and they're all conference games. And then you could have a good postseason with a bowl game. Do it all in the spring. You could, you know, March, April, have the postseason in May. Everybody's done by the end of May. Then the players get a couple months off. It could happen. It could. If you wanted to start in February, well, you drove us through a snowstorm at Penn State, and that was mid-November. So if we're playing in the Big Ten in mid-November, I don't think February is going to scare us. So,
I think they can do the weather.
I think they'll really try to do it this fall without fans, so they don't have to worry about next winter or spring. And, you know, the thing you worry about is everybody's eligibility. The guys who, if they lose a year, the seniors are going to want to come back and get an extra year next year, but then you get all the recruits coming in. A lot of schools can't handle the scholarship burden there. And it just gets hard to kind of juggle all that. So I think they really will have incentive financially and all the way around to get something done next year or in the fall. 8 games, October, November. Play everything in December or November, December, and play your postseason in January. Why not? They do anyway.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would be surprised if it got overly delayed. We'll just have to see. Like, I think the biggest question is I think a lot of places – it's not a political discussion, but there's a lot of places between State College, Pennsylvania, and Boise, Idaho, and Boise, Idaho, and Tempe, Arizona, and Miami, Florida, that would be very comfortable playing college football.
Right.
Well, I think everything east of State College and everything west of Boise is the real, to me, is the question mark. Like, those are the places where it's like, even if it's safe, I get the sense sometimes they don't want to play anyway. Like, it's just, we don't want to have a situation where if there's another outbreak, we want to make sure that we did everything we could to prevent any more cases than possible.
I'm fascinated by the difference between Phoenix, Arizona, and L.A. Obviously, L.A. is bigger, but Arizona's open for business right now. Bring it. Everybody bring it. We're open. They've got a lot of people in Phoenix. What's the difference? It's the same West Coast mentality. What's the difference between that and California? I don't know enough about it. But why is one open for business and the other one is like closed up shop for the fall on May 12th? I don't understand that.
That's a great question. And I think, when you make the comment about this is, I think you make a great comment when you say if there's no college football, there's no college basketball.
Right.
That's a great point. And I think that might swing the pendulum on the East Coast, because I don't think the East Coast cares that much about college football. I'm talking like Rutgers and I don't know, Massachusetts and Boston. But basketball? UConn's not going to play basketball? I don't know. Like that sounds different than no football.
Well, and this is their first year back in the Big East. It's a big year for them. But I just – you want to put people on airplanes. I mean, I think if you get a charter plane and you get that thing cleaned, you're fine. But if you're borrowing – but some of these charter planes, too, are like, well, it's okay, some of the team just used this one, and so we're going to clean it up and give it to you now. People with charter planes aren't necessarily – antiseptic.
I know.
They get passed from one to the other. So, what's the comfort level going to happen? I think eventually we're going to have a comfort level, and they're just going to do it. The question is the liability. That's the big deal. Who's somebody gets sick? Are you going to sue? Okay. That's always the first reaction. I'm going to sue you. So, That's going to be a holdup, and there's going to be waivers. I'm curious about youth baseball in 2 weeks. Is there a waiver? Do those guys, are they going to, parents going to sue if they get sick? I mean, I don't know. It's a weird deal.
It is.
I feel like, if you've agreed to play, you forfeit the right to sue you or any kind of litigation. You're taking on the risk. You don't want to take on the risk, don't do it. I just feel eventually we're going to get back to we're just going to dive in and do it, because we're going to need the money. We're going to go back to work. We're going to go back to games, because we're fed up and we're going to do it. And I don't know when that point's going to be, but you see signs, little signs here and there. We're starting to get back to that. So I am optimistic about the games coming back. I don't think they'll try to cram all these people into seats, because the networks will get their money, because they're going to have all kind of all-time ratings. But the timing of it for some people is it's not good for anybody. But I think about Creighton basketball. What next year's the team, and they're going to Allen Fieldhouse. Imagine playing there and not having fans. It's crazy. So,
Nebraska football. I don't hear anything that tells me. As I think about the process, and I do think some of it is a political conversation. I really do.
Yeah, everything is.
Frost wouldn't have said what he said. Frost never says anything cavalierly. When he says every governor, I know what he means, and he's right.
Yeah.
I just don't know that the states of Washington, Oregon, California, and Colorado I just don't know if they're going to move on it. I mean, they might. California especially, I just don't think there's any sort of, you know, I don't think they would ever say no to the NFL or the NBA, because the NFL and the NBA can do their own thing and they can do it without fans. But I just don't know that the colleges and those places are going to be set up to have seasons. It seems very hard right now. The state of Oregon coming out last week and saying what it said, despite the fact that the state of Oregon is one of the least hit states in the United States, it's sort of an indicator. It's not good news of like they're, you know, they've already decided that.
That when it comes to college sports, the mentality between the Pac-12 and the SEC is like here and over here. It's like the SEC will do anything they possibly can and to get people on a football field and play. And they got to have their football. I don't think people in the Pac-12, when it comes to college sports, college football, you know, USC cares, but Oregon has a lot of fans. Washington, Husky Stadium's great, but there's no urgency for college football in that part of the country. It's not, you know, Colorado is a prime example of that. When you're in a pro market, you know, college is something you just do on Saturday, and then it's just a once a week thing. And so, I guess my point is, if they would lose a college football season, would they shrug? Yeah, happened. Mm. We'll see you next year. Yeah, it hurts our money. Yeah, they don't have a lot of money in the Pac-12 anyway. They don't have a big contract. And how about water polo? I mean, it's just, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the urgency there. I don't think you're going to see it. So, you know, but you know, I think life will go on other places. There will be football in the SEC, but they won't. You know, they'll somehow try to play a national championship because that's what they live for. And
what do you think of what James Franklin said?
Well, I didn't like the fact that he said, "Well, if we got three teams in the Big Ten in the top 10, you know, we need to play." And like, what are you playing for? Who's playing? How many teams are playing? What is there a playoff? Are you gonna really claim a playoff or championship if not everybody's playing? I mean, I think next year we're just trying to get through the year. I mean, it was.
The two schools he obviously was talking about, he hates Maryland because of how that all turned out with Friedman getting fired. He was talking about Maryland and Rutgers. And I think basically what he was saying is, well, if those two schools don't want to play, where does this play?
Well, isn't Illinois kind of shut down? I mean, you wonder about Illinois.
I just think he was talking about those two schools. Right. Those two schools.
Well,
he doesn't care about those two schools. Like, and it's, you know, you've been to Rutgers. I went to Maryland and Rutgers. Their schools don't care about football. I mean, that's pretty obvious. You all you got to do is hang around the stadium that day at Maryland, and you're like, they don't care about this stuff.
Well, here's a classic example why these leagues are all too big. And that includes SEC, ACC. Yes. You've got all these governors, all these states, all these different things going on. You just had 8 or 10 in one league, and you can drive a bus everywhere. There would be the likelihood of a football season would be a lot bigger.
Yeah,
back in the old days.
I mean, we could have. I mean, Nebraska could have driven to everywhere in the Big Eight and did, right? Like, they took bus everywhere.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. You could drive to Boulder. I mean, absolutely.
You know, Nebraska flew to Boulder, though, right? They didn't take a bus.
They did, but I mean, if you had to, you could. I mean, if you had to drive, you could. They probably would fly. That's the other thing. Football is going to get whatever it needs at places like Nebraska, and so will basketball. But if they need to fly, they'll fly. If they need to spend a little extra money to keep things cleaner and make everybody protected, they will. Other sports might get cut back a little bit on that end. Maybe not as many people travel. Maybe not as many games. So I don't think the Power Five will try to cut sports if they can help it. They'll try to cut within those sports. But that's another whole other topic for us, Sam, is that athletic department is too big. And do you need that many sports? Do you need that many people? These are questions that every household in the United States will have to ask themselves about their own budget and what can I afford and what are my priorities? What can I do without? I think athletic departments and colleges are going to go through the same thing. And, you know, I love all those sports, but do you need it? Do you need 20 sports? I don't know that you do. Could you just have 10? Right. I mean, you know, colleges maybe need to look at themselves and go, what are we doing here? You know, what's important to us? Our identity is football, okay, and basketball. We'll take care of those. We need to be an athletic machine. I mean, we need to have everything. Could some of these sports just be club sports? These are tough questions, but when you spend for years and it's at the age of excess, I mean, maybe it comes back to roost at some point. Maybe that point is now. But these are things after we figure out when we're playing football and basketball. These are the questions that will come up after that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question of that. I was thinking about how, like, eventually, you know, people are going to start cutting back on all the TV services that they've signed up for. All
right.
You know, like, eventually you're going to have a situation where you're not going to have you're not going to do Netflix, and or you'll do Netflix but not Hulu, and then these places are going to run out of original content because they've stopped making stuff during the pandemic. And I think it's about that time that you'll hear people say, "You know, I think we need to go back to work." Yeah, because people are starting to cut the cord on the entertainment services that we told them that they needed to watch in lieu of doing anything else. So,
absolutely. We're going to get to that point. Absolutely. I think we'll get to that point this summer.
You run out of stuff to watch, and then they run out of stuff to put on their new to watch because they don't have that big of a roster. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with sports. I do think you're going to see a pretty major contraction in sports. I don't know if you'll see that at Nebraska, but I don't know. Maybe you will. Well, did you get a sense from Bruce Rasmussen that Creighton was, you know, looking at contracting sports?
No, his message was, we're going to take what we have and make them, we're going to make our cuts within the sports, without cutting the sports. Hmm. So he said, college baseball, why do you have to play so many games? Couldn't you play like maybe 20 fewer games and be fine? Sure you could. That would mean not playing in February when you shouldn't be playing anyway.
Good point.
Or, you know, when it comes to Big East baseball, does anybody care how many games they play? I mean, half the teams don't even know they're playing when they play them. That's the other thing. The sports like baseball in the Power Five and even the Pac-12 loves baseball. Power Five, college baseball is going to be fine. It may get cut a little bit here and there, but it's going to be okay. I'd be surprised if we lost a lot of baseball teams in that level. But the level below could be real dicey. College baseball is a very expensive sport. And it's one of the more expensive sports there are. And if you're in the Mountain West or Conference USA and you're a big part of your athletic budget comes from the university, I mean, it's not going to be good. And if you're a men's sport, probably not going to cut the women's sports. I mean, it's I can just see baseball having a hard time. What is Big East schools? I don't even know if they want to play baseball. And I've always thought Creighton should be like in the Big 12 as like a baseball member only, or go back to the Valley, which is a much better baseball league than the Big East. Now, of course, they probably throw a fit trying to go back to the Valley after being in the Big East. But
shouldn't they just disband Big East baseball? Well, what is the Big East gaining by it?
they shouldn't have a tournament. They have four teams there, and the team who wins the league, because a lot of times they don't get two bids.
Right.
So why even have the
league though? Like, why not just disband it and say, hey, you know what? You guys go find your own leagues in baseball. We're tired of paying for it. You guys don't want to go to, you know, Georgetown and Villanova. We're just disbanding the league. We don't need to play baseball.
I think that's a good point, especially going forward with the travel. It doesn't make sense. Get on an airplane. Every time Creighton plays, they have to get on an airplane. Creighton baseball, you know.
It's an obscene amount of money Creighton has to pay just to travel to play baseball games against freaking Villanova.
And every sport they have to do that. Now volleyball, they're happy to do that. Certainly, they're very good. They win the league every year. But baseball, that's a whole other topic. They've not spent the money on that sport. They've not invested in it the way they have other sports. It's kind of a miracle at times that they've been able to do as well as they have.
Right.
They play in that giant stadium, but that's kind of a pro and a con both. That's a good question, but if you look at the Big Ten baseball, do you need to have Nebraska fly all over the place to play Penn State or Maryland or
not really?
I mean, that's why I love Bruce's plan to put everybody besides football and basketball into a thing where you're back in your own region, you're back in your own neighborhood, and you just play leagues like that. And
I think his plan is really interesting. I don't know that the Big Ten would spring for it, because there's universities in the Big Ten that have an awfully high opinion of their athletic department, I think would resist it.
I think you're right, too. I think the Big Ten will, and the SEC, we're trying to make sure they have at least 20 sports and all that jazz, and then maybe they don't really need it, because it's part of image, and we have to have image. I don't know. I just think all those sports is too much. We've got people in those departments that have titles and specializations, and you know, I don't want anybody to lose their job. I really don't. And I don't want anybody to lose a sport. But we've just spent over and over and over for years, and at least Nebraska saved. Some of these schools that have spent haven't saved. So I will give Nebraska points.
Right.
Points for that. The $60 or $70 million they have in the athletic reserve fund. That'll get you through a tough winter, but it better not last more than a tough winter, because they're going to have to get through that. You know, though, some of these schools aren't going to be able to get through like that. So that's why they need football. Even a limited football season would get you half the money probably. And that'd be okay. That would be something. And then you can get on to the next year. And, I'm really curious, how are we going to come out of the pandemic in sports? What are the new rules going to be? What are the new schedules going to be? I'd love to see the NBA start on Christmas Day, opening day, Christmas Day, and then play in the summer. They want to do that. College basketball needs to start after Thanksgiving. You don't need to start in October, November, early November. You know, I think we might condense things. We might the travel might make more sense. Everything might make more sense the way it used to, and before everybody lost their minds. Which, by the way, happened, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of everybody losing their minds.
Imagine Texas in the Pac-12 right now, having to argue with California about whether they were going to play football.
Oh gosh, you wonder.
Nebraska fans would rather be in the Big 12 right now. They'll say they don't. They'll say no. But you can be confident the Big 12 is going to play football in here in the fall. They are.
Big 10. You can't be confident about the Big 10.
No.
You can't. They're good. They do things a different way. But
Well, I appreciated Franklin's comments because I think Franklin was – I don't think Franklin said those comments just like off the top of his head. I think he said them in part because he darn well knows the Big Ten is an all-for-one, one-for-all conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he, in his mind it's, hey, come hell or high, we're not letting Rutgers and Maryland decide whether we're going to play college football this year.
Well, he got after it last summer at Media Days about the playoff, and they don't care enough about the playoff, and we're not doing enough for, you know, to get in the playoff. So I like that. Mm-hmm. I think Nebraska plays that way too. But if you gave everybody in Nebraska a truth serum, you gave them a truth serum, and you said, okay, would you rather be in the Big 12 or the Big 10? I think they all say they'd rather be in the Big 12. Mm. Not all, but the majority. Just like if you gave the 10 original 10 Big 10 schools the same truth serum and said, would you wish it was just U10 Big 10 schools? They would all say yes.
Oh yeah.
We want to be the old club, the old frat. Have us do 10. And
because it was never really an East Coast league before Penn State.
Jim Delaney was an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
That's why I wonder how this might change without him. I really do. I don't know what that means, but I know, as I was about to say, I don't know if the Big Ten will have a football season, but God, they'll have a Big Ten lunch. And I don't know how they're going to do it. Everybody on Zoom. You'll have your student speaker on Zoom. You'll have to have Ryan Day and Harbaugh on Zoom. You'll have to have Reese Davis asking all these questions while these coaches who don't want to be there. They have to have that lunch, man. That lunch is the most important thing in that league. And a lot of leagues might cut back on and not have media days anymore after this year, but by God, the SEC will, because it's a TV show, and they got to have their, the 4-day TV event where you see guys walking around and Paul Feinbaum is yelling at everybody, and everybody's an SEC cheerleader. It's a big infomercial.
Yep.
The Big Ten will want it because they have to have their lunch. I mean, if you took the 14 coaches and said, do you want to have the lunch? And they would all vote no. For it'd be 14-0, no, we don't want to be at that thing. But they'll still do it. But now,
Zoom.
Will Kevin Warren do it? He's not steeped in all that stuff.
He's not a big media guy either.
So
he's going to talk to like four media outlets.
That might be.
He's asked for multiple times to interview him. Nothing.
Yeah.
He's not going to talk. He's going to be a guy that talks about four media outlets. In his entire tenure,
Delaney's
going to be a guy that's out in the Big Ten as at large.
Well, that whole Big Ten lunch mini thing was a Jim Delaney's party.
Yeah, it was.
He's out front, and he's welcoming the nation and the Big Ten into his city and his hotel and
right.
Come on in and we'll serve you lunch and you'll hear the fight songs and we'll all talk about how great the Big Ten is. And,
right. If you want to call up Jim Delaney or set up an interview with him, he'd set it up.
Oh yeah,
he was that way. Like he was, okay. And they're not going to be doing that now. Like this isn't going to be.
Yeah.
This is going to be a very different kind of operation. Kevin Warren is. I've heard nothing but good things about the way he handles athletic directors and the job as a whole. But he's not going to be, it's not going to be a coast to coast like, hey, let's talk to the Nebraska media about Nebraska. No, that's not.
But as an NFL guy, is he going to be for the playoff? Is he going to be for, let's play 8 conference games?
Oh, yeah.
Getting the playoff.
Well, I think they're going to expand the playoff, and so it won't matter. But, yeah, he wants to get him in the playoff. There's no doubt.
I think the Big Ten will do well in the playoff if they have more teams. I really do.
They will.
They need to get some of these teams. They need to get them up on up and running a little bit, like Nebraska and Michigan. They need to get them going. they need to get Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin's hard to figure out sometimes.
Right.
You know, they just kind of do what they do, and then once in a while they'll win a big non-conference game. They're pretty good at beating Miami, but then other times they're not. So
I'm sure it chaps James Franklin's ass, I'm sure, that Penn State hasn't made a playoff and Oklahoma's made three in a row and gotten completely embarrassed.
That's right.
Of those games. Well, they didn't get embarrassed against Georgia, but they've gotten embarrassed the last 2 years, and then 5 years ago when they made it then too, they got embarrassed by Clemson. Oklahoma doesn't belong in the playoff compared to Penn State if you're talking about quality of football programs. Oklahoma belongs in it because they're in a different league and they win more games. And they don't have to play Ohio State and Michigan every year.
Right.
So I'm sure it bothers Franklin but that's why I think he's focused on the upper end of it. I think he was saying something in that moment that a lot of coaches are thinking. And I think there was just a little bit of like worry that these two schools over here that nobody wanted anyway, literally nobody in the league wanted to join, can't be the impetus to the league play in the sport.
Right.
And so I think that was sort of a shot across the bow of a couple of universities that he feels maybe need to get on board.
And what was funny was the Rutgers writers were the ones that took offense to it. I don't think anybody else really paid attention to it. So
I take offense to a lot of things. They do.
Don't piss off the Jersey.
There's more scrutinized athletic department that it produces less than Rutgers. And that media there covers that program like nobody's business. They don't get it. They don't achieve anything. And they're constantly mired in scandal. So what do you expect to happen?
just don't piss off the Jersey guys.
Right? Apparently not.
Don't do that. It's not good.
But I'm like, there's a scandal at Rutgers every fourth day. There's a lawsuit. There's a disgruntled ex-player. There's drama behind the scenes.
At least they're making the league interesting.
Yet we have to worry about what they think about everything.
At least they're making the league interesting. The league has no personality. Has no characters. It's boring.
It's awful. And will continue to be a fairly buttoned-up league.
I miss the Big 12 for that so much as a writer of characters and storylines. And
you don't think PJ Fleck's a character?
He's on an island, and he took a rowboat out there.
People don't seem to appreciate Fleck very much. And I'm just saying that, like, if he weren't in the league and it was still Tracy Clays, oh, man. You'd go to Big Ten Media Days, and you just wouldn't be sure who would say anything at all.
But there's just so many boring programs that just overshadow. You try to rise up and – I mean, look at, Scott Frost has been shouted down. Oh, we can't have this. We can't, we'll show you. And, you can't. Scott Frost said some of the stuff he said in the Big 12, they just laugh at him. Like, who cares? They wouldn't be insulted. They'd go, that's kind of lame. What would these people do with Steve Spurrier? I mean, some of the stuff he said. So,
well, you got to be Urban Meyer. Like, Urban Meyer came in and said it. Nobody could say anything because he won. And then he kicked their butts.
Well, that's true.
I actually appreciate the things that Scott has said over the first 2 years he's been in there. Mm-hmm. But then you got to – if he'd won 10 and 12 games in his first couple of years, everybody be like, all right, guess he's right. We better shut up. So he's going to have to win the games before people are going
to – And he's going to have to get the playmakers before he can win the games.
That's right.
They're coming.
A decent kicker, which I think they got today, and a very good punter, and I think they actually got a really good punter, will help more, in my opinion, than a fifth wide receiver. I mean it. They were so bad at those two positions last year that
– Absolutely.
It cost them games.
They've got to clean things up, and that's a good place to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, his system is based on our skill guys.
Yeah.
Difference makers. They're not going to pound the ball. They're not going to dominate the way Wisconsin and Iowa do with offensive line. They need a good offensive line. They don't necessarily need to have a great one. But what they got to be great at is the receivers, the slot backs, the running backs who can catch and run, quarterback. What they need to do is have an offensive and defensive line that is good. Okay, you've got to be able to hold your own, but you're not going. You can't beat Wisconsin and Iowa at their own game. You're not going to do it. You're just not going to do it. You might beat them once in a while. If you try to play the way they're playing and try to beat them, you're not. So I think what they're doing is very smart. But they got to get the players. They got to get guys who can score touchdowns. And once they do that, I think it'll put them over the top. That's a whole other topic. I just went Billy Tubbs on you there. I talked too much. I went over here.
No, it's great.
And then you come back around and go, okay, what was the question again? And everybody would laugh.
No, it's good.
That was Billy Tubbs.
Billy Hayes in the, or Billy Tubbs. We need more Billy Tubbs.
So what else we got?
I think that's about it. We've hit our hour mark. We started before you came on. We talked punters and kickers. So I figured I'd get that out of the way, and then we'd hit which we just hit.
The LSU guy sounds good. But
we won't have Evan next week. We'll have Chris. Chris shall return.
Well, I do my furlough next week, and I guess I have plenty of time to be on, but I guess I'm not allowed to be on. So.
Oh, never mind. You're on a break.
I'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah, next week would have been the Big Ten tournament here. And for those keeping score at home, and World Series would have started around June 14th. But it doesn't feel like any of that stuff should happen right now. I don't know what it feels like. It feels like I'm gonna have lunch. I'm gonna hang out and watch a little TV. Drive my daughters around, and do whatever they want to do, and. I might go to Hy-Vee. I'll wear my mask, and I'll watch Adam 12 at 4:00, and then I'll watch. I might watch Wagon Train. These are not shows that are on Netflix. Later on, I might watch MASH or something like that, and I'll go for my walk.
Have you convinced your daughters to watch Wagon Train with you? I know.
No, that's not happening. They're on YouTube and TikTok and all that jazz. So I will do all that stuff, and then I will.
Is Rawhide in the?
No, I can't get
Rifleman.
The Virginian. That's my show.
Yeah.
I love the Virginian. But that. And I just got through Ozark. I did that in about a week and a half. That was wonderful. I'm hooked on Better Call Saul. That's over.
That's a good show.
But that's over now. So, I'm starting to think about Yellowstone. I have not watched that before, but that's coming.
Bill Moose about it. He's a big fan.
Who's that?
Bill Moose.
Okay.
Big fan of Yellowstone.
Of course, he probably stars in it.
his personality is almost
name,
big enough.
The name. I mean, the guy
quite a show.
Moose, he can be a character in the show. Bill Moose, one of the ranchers.
I tell you what, Bill would be a great what do you want to call it? A great special guest star on any Western.
Yes.
If there's a Western out there, and you had a role. Where maybe you could call him I don't know Big Bill or Tough Bill rides into town, lays down the law. That would be his role, and he'd be good at it. I'd love to see Bill Moose. He probably ought to try to pursue that. If he's got a bucket list, that ought to be on it. After he retires from Nebraska in 8 years or whatever, try to get on one of those Westerns, and
I have ventured out a little bit. I went to a store. We had to buy a birthday thing for somebody, so we went to Westroads. Bomb hour.
Yeah.
Wore masks. It seemed to be fine. I knew a couple of restaurants and did that, sat at every other table, and seemed to be fine, you know, wore a mask and all that jazz. And so it's starting to feel a little bit normal, but it's I just can't imagine driving to Lincoln and talking to people right now. I just like the God, it's just it's like some of the world that I used to live in. But I can't wait for it to happen again. And I hope they let all of us the pack of the pack of 80 media people into that little room. I wonder if they'll do that.
I hope so too.
You know, but we'll be there soon enough, and it would. I don't know. I just, you know, one thing I've noticed too was we aren't talking about Nebraska being overhyped. This has been one off season where nobody's been worried about how many games they're going to win, or you know, are they going to deliver? Are they going to be disappointed? Are they going to you know, is Frost overhyped? Is he not this or that? In that sense, when they do play, it'll be like, well, what to catch up in a hurry? Well, who's on this team? How good are they going to be? Who are they going to play?
That's all gone. The off-season, spring football hype season where we write 17 stories about guys who haven't even done anything against another opponent that isn't their teammate. That's over. We didn't write about it.
Well, I think as soon as we get to come back, as soon as we find out we're going to come back in some form, that's going to be fun. We're gonna get to know the team all over again and ask all these fresh questions that ordinarily and around these stories that would have been written over and over. It's gonna be great, and the appetite will be there. People are gonna want to read and want to talk, and we'll be there for them.
Yeah, I can't wait. I hope it happens soon. Tom, thanks for joining us today. Yes. Hopefully, you can come back really soon. To our listeners, we'll be back next week to talk about God knows what, because as the weeks go on, there appears to be less and less to discuss at the beginning of the week, and then by the end of the week, we have more and more to talk about. Thanks, Husker fans.